Okay, welcome back, everybody. Today's class number 6 in our phrenology series. Today is probably be the most complicated topic. I'll try to keep it simple, but it's a very famous story that people don't realize this argument. So I'll share my screen and we'll get to the title. Where's my title? Here we go. Okay, it's class number 6, and the question is, when did Moshe break the luchot? Before he prayed or after he prayed? Now, if someone asked you that question, what would you say? Most famous prayers by Chama Shechem Hashem Elokav, everyone knows that prayer. We read it on fast days. But why do people think that Moshe prayed before he broke the luchot? Just someone give me the quick answer before I start. Anybody want to volunteer?
Moshe says that he'll go after he broke the luchot and destroyed the eagle. He said, I'm going to go up Ulaya Chapra. Maybe I'll be able to get forgiveness.
No, but didn't he pray beforehand?
Yes.
Didn't he pray before he went down?
That's the order of the text.
The order of the text. That's the
Lech Reid.
Yeah. But for some reason, Eben Ezra, who knows his Chumash, claims it's out of order. Now, I simply brought this, A, because we're very near Parsha Kitis and Vayakel. It relates to Chumash a lot, that we're doing now. And also, it relates to this big topic of, if Chumash is out of order, because once Chumash is often out of order, and we've proven it is, and that's why I brought the picture here, that we talked about last week. Once it seems to be part of Chumash's style, if I follow Chazal, which we explained last week, makes perfect sense. Once I understand that Chumash intentionally is telling the story about Har Sinai, and even though chronologically we go like this, the story of Chet Egel, and only afterwards the commandment to build the Mishkan, which is like a kosher Egel, and then we build it, Chumash is out of order, and Chumash did that intentionally to teach us something. I mean, as soon as we can establish that quite often Chumash will purposely present stories out of the chronological order for thematic reasons, and some parshanim will always entertain that possibility, even when it's not obvious. Got it? So consider it. Rabban is always reluctant to do that. Sometimes he has to. But Eben Ezra, whenever it's thematically convenient, he'll do it, especially when I have sources, all the sources. So I need to begin this year by reviewing what we did last week in the story of the golden calf. I'm trying to explain why the story of the golden calf is out of order. Give me a second. I'm going to mute everybody real fast. Like, is there some background noise? Let me stop the share for a second and I'll unmute everybody. Participants. Okay. And mute all. Okay. And now we'll go back to our share screen. Back to. And again, if my sound goes bad today, because I'm not from home, just let me know and I'll change to a different microphone. But if it's clear, I'll use one. If it's not broken, we won't fix it. So the main thing we said, I tried to show you last week, is the reason why the people go to Aaron and ask.
Rabbi Lintag, know, your sound is garbled also again this week.
It is
it's
garbled.
Like there's a that's feedback.
That's what I want you to tell me. So let me switch to a different microphone. Let me see what I have now. I'll try my headphones now. If it's garbled, let me check what he's connected to now. Microphone array. Just wait a second, real quick test. Is this any better? 1, 2, 3.
Yes, it's very good. It's fine.
That's better? Okay, so I'll try it this way now. Use the microphone for my camera. There was a Kranzler. Where's Chaim Kranzler? I see a Chaim Kranzler. On Shabbos, there was a Kranzler. Who's a Kranzler in Ithaca? Wait, I met.
It's my daughter.
That's your daughter?
Yes.
She's the, what do you call? She's the.
In Cornell, was the head of Hillel in Cornell.
Oh, Ari's wife.
Yes.
You married Ari's wife. Yeah, okay, that's it. I spent Shabbos with him in Cornell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we talked about Kranzler's. Okay. Sorry about that for everybody, but I saw the name Kranzler, and that was our topic on Shabbat. Okay, great. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. Let's get back to our share now. Sorry about that. Okay, let's get back to work. We were talking about, let me explain what we did last week. I try to suggest that there's logic in the people turning to Aaron, asking for some power, because their logical assumption is that Moshe is not coming back, and the fact he hasn't come back for weeks It's the strongest proof he's not going to come back again. And they can't stay in the desert forever. They don't want to go back to Egypt. They want to go to Israel. But to go to Israel, you need help conquering the land. God promised to send a malach lefenehem. I'm sure my screen now. God promised the people in the end of Parshat Mishpatim, before Moshe went up, promised that they heard, that God says, here, I'm going to send a malach to lead the way, bring you to the promised land. You have to listen to him, etc. And again, this malach will lead the way and help you conquer the land. And everyone assumed this malach would lead Moshe because he's done it up until now. But now that Moshe is not coming back, they need some power that will lead the way. That's, they want Elim Ashir Yechul Lefaneinu. We made the big deal about that comparison between Malach Lefanecha and Yechul Lefaneinu. And we want an Elohim, a power, because the last time they fought battle, the only time they fought a war was with Amalek, and Moshe holding his Mateh Elohim enabled them to defeat their enemies. So they want some symbol of God to help them defeat their enemies. And therefore, they think it's a good idea. Aaron assumes it's a good idea. And he makes a symbol of God. Why he picked an egg? We brought some reasons. But the fact that he builds in front of it a Mizbeach for God and says, Chag L'Hashem Machar, there's no doubt Aaron's intentions were good. The results were bad. And we explained that in the celebration that followed it, which was similar to the celebration in Har Sinai, the party got out of hand. And when the party got out of hand, the way the people behaved at the party reflected their core Egyptian culture that they did not get rid of. And God realizes these people have not been educated enough. They're not ready yet to get the land of Israel. And they need some more training. And therefore, he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I tested them. They failed the test. We have to try something else. Now, so that was our share last week. I wrote down the thing. We explained the people to Moshe without return, I think. Something's wrong with my mouse. There we go. And he had to daven. I'm sorry. There we go. And they needed some miracle working leader that would assist them. That's why they wanted a God. And the problem was they wanted a God working for them and not a God they were working for. They saw the egel as some military tool. They weren't interested in becoming God's people to sanctify God and the society they're building. They simply wanted God to work for them to defeat their enemies so they could become king on the hill, have a full right-wing government and oppress anybody they wanted. And they wanted God to work for them and didn't understand what the purpose of the chosenness was. Now, we're going to follow the story now. We're going to follow the story in Sefer Shemot and see Moshe Davins. Okay, so remember, they got up in the morning. They brought Olot and Shlamim, like at Har Sinai. They got up to eat and drink. And the big thing we talked about last week, by Kumo Litzachek, they got wild. Frivolous behavior, you name it, they did it. Now, God told Moshe Rabbeinu, go down. Remember, ki shichet amcha. Remember all the parallels to the flood story? Shichet is corruption. We saw that in the flood story last week. Okay? That you took out of Egypt. Saru maher min aderach asher tzivitim, the way that God commanded us, that we saw that last week also, was doing mishpat and staka. And on top of that, they made for themselves an ego masecha. Not an ego to represent God, but for their needs. And they bowed down to it. They were worshiping the symbol of God instead of God himself. And they said, this is the God who took us out of Egypt, who's going to help us defeat our enemies going out of Israel. And it was basically God's upset with their behavior. And that's God's next line, which we're going to highlight now, which all relate to Moshe's prayer in a minute. What does God say? I see the people. Ra'iti et ha'amaseh. I see the nation. Which God reaches a conclusion, and they are an Am She'orach, which means they don't change. I can't change their direction. A stiff naked person can't change direction. Therefore, he suggests to Moshe Rabbeinu, now allow me, which Chazal say he's almost hinting to Moshe, you should daven. Okay. Let me kindle my anger and consume them, and I'll make a nation out of you. Now I want to begin with this line right here. Here we begin our shir today. When God tells Moshe, I'll make a goy gadol out of you, that's important because God's promise to Avram Avinu, Abeschal Goy Gadol, from the beginning of Lech Lecha, on that promise, what's called Brit Avot, there's a Shvua after the Akedah, there's an oath by God, and Brit Avot cannot be broken. It's an eternal Brit that some offspring, not all the offspring, but some offspring of Avram Avinu has to inherit the land of Israel, and God will make sure it'll happen. Now, but the people coming out of Egypt, after all their behavior, not just Chet Egel, but everything till then, they've been complaining all the time. God reaches the conclusion, the way they are now, they can't do it. I can make a nation out of people like Moshe. Maybe Shevet Levi. Maybe what means not just Moshe himself, but Shevet Levi, or people like Moshe. Let me make a nation for people who are perfect. But he needs Moshe to agree to it. Now, if I keep Chumash in order, what happens? While he's still on the mountain, what's Moshe do? V'echam Moshe. Et p'nei Hashem. Moshe prays to God. Okay. Remember, Achila leo achalep panav. Achalep panav of Rambam, I mean, Ebenezer points out that V'echal is always al p'nei. Always, when it's prayer, it's V'echal et p'nei Hashem. And achalep panav. So Moshe prays to God and says two things. Remember these two reasons he's giving. Number one, Lama Yamru, Lama Hashem, Yechrap, why get angry at your people that you took out of Egypt with your great might? And now here comes the two reasons. Lama Yamru Mitzrayim Lemor, why should Egypt come and say, Barah Utsiyam Larog Otam Baharim, you took them out of Egypt. One second, I can't put something on my computer. Here we go. Why would the people say, Vara utziam, ra meaning could be the Egyptian god or just with evil. You took them out of Egypt, in the mountains, and to destroy them, from the face of the earth. Remember, a lashon very similar to what he called to the flood again. And Moshe begs God, shumi choron afecha, don't become angry. Right? Turn away from your anger, from your choron ah. Okay? And v'nachem alor alamecha, change your ways, change your mind from this evil you want to do to your people. Just pay attention to all the flood imagery that comes up. Now, that's point number one. This God, not to get so angry, don't use midat hadin. Don't use your midat of judgment. You're out to use of judgment. On top of that, remember Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, that you made the promise to them. You'll give them a lot of children. Not just that their Zerah will get fine, but they'll have a lot of children. They'll have a lot of Zerah, Kochei Hashemayim, which we are now. If you destroy them, we won't be Kochei Hashemayim anymore. Then, and you promised to give this land to all those children. So he does two things. What Yud Bet is a Chilo Hashem. What would the nation say? And what's the point? The only reason you chose this was to make your name great. Number one. Number two, remember what you promised your forefathers. The two things, Chilo Hashem and Tzvut Avot and Brit Avot. Now, then we're told that what? God agrees that what? He changes his mind. He changes his mind of the evil he wanted to do to the people. Which means what? He forgave them? It's not clear whether he forgave them or not. But it seems like Moshe's prayer worked. Okay. Now, then what happens? The story we know. Moshe comes down with the Lukot. Yahushua hears the noise. We read this last week. And Moshe tells him that's not the noise of a war. It sounds like a war, but it's the noise of a wild party. And he sees the dancing around the Egel. Moshe gets angry. And he breaks the Lukot, which is a symbol of the breed. We'll talk about that in a minute. He takes the ego and he burns it. We don't have to do this for today's year. And then he says as follows. He challenges Aaron that we talked about last week. You know, what caused you to cause them to sin? And Aaron blames on Moshe because you didn't come down. He explains what happened. And then the key thing for us is, Vayar Moshe, Moshe sees the people that they're wild, they're parua. Aaron caused them to get wild, that they're disgraced and they're enemies. And then Moshe finds now, who are the perpetrators? Who are the troublemakers who got this whole thing started? And they find guilty 3,000 people who were executed. And then after all that, in Pasuk Lamed, we'll pick up our story. Vayimi Mocharat, the day after they punished those who they found guilty. Moshe tells the people, you did a terrible sin. Ata Elel Hashem, I'm going to go up to God. Maybe I can get kapara or atonement. We'll see, for your sin. Now the question is, if 3,000 people were punished, it seems like I'm calling them the troublemakers as opposed to the sinners. It seems like everybody sinned, but to the perpetrators. So first I gotta get rid of the troublemakers, but everyone sinned, but these people were the ones who started it. This seems to be the easiest explanation of why, on the one hand, Moshe doesn't daven for kapara until we punish the 3,000 who've sinned. So Moshe returns to God and says, Anach, please, The people did a terrible sin. They made an Elohim Asecha, Elohim Zahav. They made a golden image of you. And now Moshe begs, in Tisachatatam, carry away their sin. And if not, I'm not going to be in your book, meaning if you don't forgive them, you can't make a nation out of me. You would think God would say yes, but God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, don't tell me who to forgive. I'll decide who to forgive. But God gives Moshe this famous answer, which we're going to make a big deal about soon. God tells Moshe, Ata lech nechetam, go and lead the people. El asher dibarti lach. Go lead them to the land of Israel. I'll send a malach to lead you. And when I punish them, I'll punish them. God's answer is not the people are forgiven. God's saying, go to Israel without me. And he explains it in Perek Lamed Gimel. God tells Moshe, you take them. I'm not coming with you. Because you're an amkshei orah. Now, to explain this setup, I call it Herzl's dream come true. Let's just review what we talked about before. What's God saying? God's saying that in a simple manner, what Moshe is saying, he's requesting that he forgive them and that we remain God's people. God's telling Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't identify myself with this people. This people, their behavior is so bad, I can't bring my Shekhinah with them. They can't be a Goy Kadosh, but they can be a Goy Gadol. And he's telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you want them, you can have them, meaning God can fulfill Brit Avot without Brit Sinai. Brit Sinai is broken, symbolically, by breaking the Luchot. What's Brit Sinai? To be a Goy Kadosh, a nation representing God. It's clear to God that the people are not capable of being a nation representing God because of their behavior. They didn't pass the test in the desert. God is committed to Brit Avot. And therefore, if God listens to Moshe's prayer, then he can fulfill Brit Avot. You can bring them to Israel, but God's not coming with them. No Brit Sinai. And then, and that's the situation we're in. And then Moshe will daven to bring Brit Sinai back. Now, I want to stop here with the story in Shemot. And now keep this story in mind. And we're going to read the parallel story in Sefer Dvarim. Now, pay attention. In Sefer Dvarim, Moshe is telling the new generation, giving them sort of a pep talk to make sure they don't repeat the same mistakes of the first generation. Now, we're about to go to Israel. Moshe needs them to know that conquering the land of Israel is impossible without God's help. And listen to what Moshe says now in Sefer Dvarim. The story will be very similar to the story in Shemot with a couple of differences. Ebenezer is going to pay attention to a major difference, which I want you to pay attention to. First, I'm going to give the background. Moshe begins his speech as follows. Shema Yisrael, he tells them, wake up. We're about to cross the Jordan River, the new generation, to go conquer enemies greater than us, cities with walls to the heaven. He sounds just like the spies, doesn't he? He's telling the people, it's impossible to conquer the land of Israel without God's help. I'm Gadol Baram Bnei Anakim, there's giants in the land, and everyone knows no one can defeat these giants. In other words, Moshe wants the people to know that conquering the land of Israel without God's help is impossible. But to have God's help, what do you need to do? You need to keep his mitzvot. And therefore, what do you need to know? Yadat Hayom, because that Hashem Elokach, Hashem, your God, he can lead the way. He can defeat your enemies for you. And if he helps you, you can defeat them and take over the land. But it requires you becoming devoted to keeping the mitzvot. And don't think the land belongs to you. Don't think, I'm so righteous, I'm privileged, I get the land. He says, no, you don't deserve the land. Midat Adin, you don't deserve it. But what do you call it? They're being thrown out because they're evil. You're being chosen to do something better. Based on your track record, till now, you don't deserve it, but I'm giving you another chance anyhow. But you need to know and understand, lo b'tzitzchatcha. It's not because you're so great you're getting the land. It's only because of the promise I made to your forefathers. Now, Moshe wants to remind them that without being dedicated, and that's this mega theme throughout Sefer Devarim, the people need to know if they want God's help conquering the land, they have to be worthy of his help, and therefore they have to keep the mitzvot. That's why as he teaches the mitzvot that they have to keep when they come in the land, he's reminding them, if you don't keep them, you're going to die. God won't be able to help you conquer. Yeah. And then he reminds them of their experiences. Remember what happened in the desert. From the time you left Egypt to this day, you've been rebellious. You've been rebellious against God. And he gives examples. And the first example is from Chet Egel. Now, it's in this context he's telling the story of Chet Egel. You got angry with God. I mean, God got angry with you. You made God angry at you at Har Sinai and Chorev. And God was angry with you and wanted to destroy you. Let's follow the story of what happens and when he happens. Listen carefully now. Baloti Ahara. Baloti Ahara. Let's go. When I came up the mountain, I went up to get the Luchot on the first 40 days. I was there for 40 days and 40 nights. Didn't eat any bread, didn't drink. Now, that's the first Luchot. After 40 days and 40 nights, God gave me the two Luchot. Plus a good bet. Now our story is going to be parallel. Kum read my hair, Mizeh. Quickly go down the mountain. Kishichetamcha. That's the exact same story, right? Bechrei kishichetamcha. You took out of Egypt. Tor my hair, Mizeh. Derech hashir stibitim. Asulam elad masicha. That's a perfect match so far. Vayomer Hashem Elai. Read the damit avidim shorukul. Another perfect match. Agreed? Almost word for the same story. God tells Moshe, "Harvi many vashmidem, allow me to kill them. I'll wipe out their name, and I'll make you a great nation, greater than them." So far, the exact same story, isn't it? Now listen carefully. I came down the mountain, and I saw the egel, your sin that you made, and you went astray from God, and I took the two luchot and I broke them. What's missing in this story?
Prayer.
Like how Moshe is missing. Is that obvious now? Now, when Moshe tells the story in Sefer Devarim, it's almost word for the same story, but Moshe's prayer before he goes down is missing. Which brings the big question, why is it missing? So let's continue reading and see if Moshe is going to mention it. So he breaks it. Got it? Then after he breaks the Luchot, he fell down before God another 40 days, like the first 40 days, and now 40 days and 40 nights. Again, lechem lochati b'ayim lo shetiti. Asher chatatem Hashem. He prayed for 40 days after he broke the Luchot. Why? Because I was so worried about God's anger, which he was angry, he wanted to destroy you. Now, listen carefully now. Pay attention. And God listened to me this time as well. What's he referring to? Look at that.
He refers to Vayechal in Sefer Shmot.
Okay. That's what most Parshanim say. Everyone but Ibn Ezra. They say, what's he referring to? Just like God listened to me before he went down the mountain from Baikal, even though it's missing in this story, he listened to him when he came down. Now, but if God answered his prayer before he came down, why is he praying again? That's the big question that's going to bother Ibn Ezra. Number one, Baikal's not mentioned here. And why is Moshe saying God listened to me this time as well? Ibn Ezra claims this is going back to Kriyat Yamsuf, where the people complained to God, how come you took us out of Egypt? Why'd you bring us out here to die? Moshe cries out to God and God saved them. And on all the events from the time they left Egypt, and with the manna and Marim and Fidim, God keeps on saving them and Moshe keeps on crying out to God. So, according to Ibn Ezra, Moshe davens, we'll see his prayer in a minute, but when he said that God listened to me this time as well, is not referring to the Baikal of the Chet HaEgel, because it's not mentioned here, it's referring to the earlier story. Then he says he was also angry at Aaron, and he prayed for Aaron as well, that we only hear about in the Devarim. Okay. And then I took the Egel and I grounded it up, you know, and put it into the water system, made you drink it, like a sota. And then he brings more examples in Tavera and Masav, Kibrota Tava, all these cases, you got angry at you. And finally, with sending the spies, You rebelled against God. Again, basically, we're listening all the times, not just Chet Egel, all the times in the desert where God was angry with us. Summary, you've been rebellious against God from the time I know you. Now notice, in all these stories he's giving, what's the title from the beginning to the end? Mamrim Hayitem Yom Datichem. You've been rebellious. From the point of view of the speech, let's go back to the beginning. Moshe says, remember how bad you've been from the time you left Egypt to see God here. See this? Mamrim Hayitem Yom Hashem. You've been rebellious against God. And I should have a bullet to listen on. You've been rebellious against God, number one, Chet HaEgel. And then he continues after Chet HaEgel. It's mostly detailed about Chet HaEgel. But after Chet HaEgel, he mentions he prayed, but he doesn't say what the prayer was. And then he says, he davens right here. In Tavera, Masa, and Kibrota Tava, also you got angry, and Chetam Raglim. All the stories of Sefer Bamidbar. And then, summary, Mamrim Mitim and Shem Yom Dati Yotem. You've been rebellious against things from the time I know you. So he finishes how rebellious they were.
You have again the word of Tamru.
Excuse me?
You have again the word Vatamrun.
Vatamrun, you get God. And again, yeah. It starts with Mamrim Eitem and ends with Mamrim Eitem.
And you have Vatamrun, also, and when Moshe, instead of talking to the Sela, he says,
Shimon Amorim.
Shimon Amorim.
Yeah. And the Matev Aron later on is going to be, what do you call it? A note is Memeri, a sign for rebellious people. Basically, they've been rebellious the whole time in the desert. Now, for some reason, after mentioning how bad they were, Moshe has to explain why God accepts them and doesn't destroy them. And now he quotes, as a footnote to the story, now he's going to explain his prayer. That Napalti Pnei Hashem et Abayim Yom Abayim Laila Shrit Napalti. Now, I prayed for 40 days and 40 nights. But Kolel Hashem Bomar, listen carefully to this tefillah. Here's a big question. Moshe is going to say, this was my 40-day prayer after I broke the Luchot. This for sure is after. Let's see if this is the same prayer as Vayikra Moshe. Okay? We'll take it a phrase at a time. Remember, this prayer in Devarim is clearly after he breaks the Luchot. It's the next set of 40 days. Is this an additional to Vayikra Moshe, or this is the same one? But Palel Hashem Bomar Hashem, Al Tashchet Et Hamen Achlotecha, don't destroy your people that you took out with your greatness out of Egypt. We have Chazaka. You did so much taking out of Egypt that we'll see the Chil Hashem part in a minute. Remember Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and don't turn the wickedness of the people. That's Brit Avot. And now Chil Hashem Pen Yemru Har Tashor Tenim Mishem Ibli Yifat Hashem Avim Asher Diber Lehem. People in Egypt will say, because you're so weak, you wouldn't be able to take them into the land, and because you hate them, you took them out to kill them. But they're your people. But Moshe is giving the same two reasons, Kut Avot and Filo Hashem. What the Egyptians will say. Now, if this prayer is thematically identical to the prayer of Vayikra Moshe, guess what Ebenezer is going to say? The question is it the same prayer or a new prayer? So there's two Ebenezer. There's two versions of Ebenezer. Here's the first one. Vayikra Moshe. Yesh omrim ki zot hatfila hi hanizker b'parsha v'haya ekev b'shmon. In Sefer Shmot, he says, Moshe davens. Some people say that this tfila is the same one that we just read in Parshat Ekev. We just read this right here. That Palel Lifnei Hashem, remember Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov and the Chilo Hashem. Some people say it's the same prayer. Got it? Okay. And therefore, if it's the same prayer, Achar Shuv Moshe El Ahar. Ebenezer is saying his commentary on Shmot that Vaychal Moshe belongs later. What's his proof? From Sefer Devarim. Hope that point's clear. What's the anchor of Ebenezer's approach? Saying Moshe's Tfilah in Sefer Devarim is clearly after he breaks the Luchot, not when he's up on the mountain. And the prayer, a 40-day prayer after breaks the Luchot, is so similar to the prayer that's written in Sefer Shemot and Vaychal. He said that prayer must be a prayer given later, but it's inserted earlier for some thematic reason. We'll see why in a minute. But it's because of the similarity of the prayer, hence it's the same prayer, therefore we want to claim that the story in Shemot is out of order. Got it? And that's the title of the share today. It's when the Moshe davened before after he broke the Luchot. According to Ebenezer, which I think is surprising to most people, Ebenezer claims that Moshe's prayer by Chal Moshe to read on every fast day is after he breaks the Luchot, not when he's up on the mountain. And again, Bezot HaTfilah Ya Ro'i Liketev Achrei Shuv Moshe Lahar. This prayer is only given after he returns to the mountain later on, but it's inserted earlier. Vacharim Omrim, other people say, and other people say that the one in Devarim is not the one, it's not Baikal, and there's two different tefillot, and everything is in order. Okay? So he has to make his decision. He says there's two ways to look at it. With the feed that Ebenezer says, what's he saying? Thematically, it's the same prayer. Not linguistically, it's not word for word. Because it's different wording, but it's the same thing. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating thematically what happened. So he says, if the two reasons that we find in Baikal, Hilo Hashem and Zchut Avot and Brit Avot, I find in Baikal and Shmot, and I find in Dvarim, if they're thematically the same, then most likely it's the same prayer. And if the one in Dvarim is after it breaks the Luchot, then Baikal and Shmot has to be after it breaks the Luchot, and it's out of order in Shmot. Okay. And then he gives, now a technical reason, he gives the Sfarah. This is what he said. How can you pray to God before he solves the problem? And this is Ebenezer's boldest statement. He's going to say it again in a minute. He's saying, it doesn't make sense that if there's a disaster going on in the camp and you can do something about it, it's not time to daven. And here's the big question. When there's trouble going on, and when there's a crisis, do you daven first or do you act first? You see how fundamental this is? Am Yisrael is in trouble. Things are really bad. Is the first thing you do daven, or is the first thing you do act? So Ebenezer is claiming, Moshe, as soon as God tells him, Moshe has to go down right away. Not time to daven yet. Okay? Because how can Moshe turn to God before he solves the problem? How can he pray to God to forgive the people if the people are still sinning? Okay? So first he has to, what do you call it? Burn the egg yolk, make the people drink the water, and kill the people who perpetrated it. Okay? So that's his claim, that it's out of order. Then he has to explain why it's out of order in Shmot. What's he say? Rak Hashem ramazlo, shitpalel achrei rito b'yasar yego. When God said, Abta hanicha li, allow me, and what do you call it? And then we get angry at them, God was hinting that Moshe could daven afterwards. You see what Ebenezer is saying? Like, why is it tefillah here? Because when God said, Vata nichali, vayichar b'hem, and now allow me and let me punish them, God's alluding to the fact that after Moshe solves the problem, he should daven afterwards. And because he alluded to that here, we prematurely bring the prayer here. Okay? Ketuv ulecha pravatchatchem. He says that's, the story will be later on. The full details for it will be later on. We'll see. We'll talk about it in a minute. I'll explain this to Ebenezer in a minute. Okay. And what's the reason why it's out of order? Explain. Listen carefully now. Go back up here. Here's his key point. Okay. V'nei ba'avur shashem amar lo v'ata anichale. Because God said, now allow me. Why is it out of order in Shmot? It's out of order because God already alluded that he should daven. And therefore, almost as a parenthetical note, almost like a footnote, oh, by the way, this is tefillah that Moshe says later on, but I'm mentioning it now before the story continues. And therefore, the parsha is out of order. Bein Mukdam Mukhar Torah, which is the title of our series. Got it? But basically, Ibn Ezra claims that Moshe's tefillah, the same tefillah by Chacham Moshe, he says it after he breaks the luchot. And when he goes up to ask for kapara for the people. And not, you know, it's the story that we find recorded later on in Perek Lamed Bet. And it's simply prematurely mentioned because it's alluded to in God's opening statement. Rak rotsam lidabek davar bi asher chatani, right? Imbatan lechnekeit am. He gives a technical reason why split in half. And Ebenezer, the second Ebenezer in Shmuel, there's two versions of it. This by Chau, he quotes the Pesukim in Devarim. Okay? And he says, the prayer in Devarim, that the Pavli Pnei Hashem, Yom Hashem Nashmid Atem, is the same prayer here as what he said also there, as Herf Meni Vashmidem, he says, he goes now and proves it's the same prayer. Okay? And here's his big line, what he says. Ki ein hadat sovelet shitpalel Moshe ba'ad Yisrael ba'avodas harav b'nehem ad sheisir otam. I'm going to read that again. That's his biggest point. Listen to what he says. He says, ein hadat sovelet, it doesn't make any sense that Moshe would pray while Am Yisrael is already sinning. If they're sinning and doing Avodah Zarah, Moshe has to go down first and get rid of the Avodah Zarah, then he can pray. You know, if there's a sin going on and you can do something about it, deal with the sin, solve the crisis, and then pray later. After you've solved the problem. So he says, that stability, that this doesn't make sense. The Moshe would daven when he should be active. But Ebenezer's approach is amazing because it affects how we, when we daven and when we act. You see what Ebenezer is saying? When there's a crisis going on, it's not time. Now, give me another example of God telling Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not time to daven, it's time to act. Give me a famous one. Why cry to me? We're talking about it's amazing hashkafa, isn't it? When there's a crisis going on and you can do something, you act before you pray.
It justifies Pinchas's act.
Yeah. There's a crisis, solve it right away. Act. There's a time to daven and time to act. Okay. And then he says, I'm not used to not having my mouse, so it's getting mixed up here. Okay. So then what he does afterwards, he compares everything. He compares Zechor L'Avdechal Avram Yitzchak Yaakov is Zechor L'Avram. He's going to do now. He's going to take every phrase in Shmot and compare it to the phrases in Devarim to show thematically the same. Okay. He says, "Asher teisha b'chag dov zorn chuliyah devarim is the same as Asher teisha merit mitzrayim in Sefer Shmot. Kol avdech ram tzach yakov in devarim is the same as kol avram tzach yakov avdech in Shmot." Got it? He goes on, "Vayekein yomru ha'aretz Asher teinu misham es lama yomru mitzrayim." But he goes line by line in the tefillah that's after breaking the luchot in Parshat Ekev, and he matches it with all the words in Vaychal, proving. Thematically, it's the same prayer. And if it's the same prayer, then for sure it's after he breaks the luchot, then it's after he comes down the mountain, like in Parshat Ekev. Then he says, "V'nei Moshe Napel, sorry, Arbeim Yom, V'Hashem Amar Lo Ki Kena La Bikibracha, V'nei Lo Yestu Aharon." Yet Moshe prayed, Hashem, and God's answers was, "I won't kill them, but I'm not going to go with you. And therefore, don't make the Mishkan." Then we have Perek Lamed Gimel. First, God forgives them, I won't kill them. But then Moshe prays, and Moshe listened to God's answer. I won't kill them, but I'm not going to dwell with them. Only after that, then Moshe davens to bring the Shekhinah back. Rachel Tzivo Hashem, Shered Bitol Lepot, Yalem Yadov Bahar, Az Yerad. I think it's the order of the story of the... I'll get to the second luchot in a minute. I'll explain what he's getting at here about when does God tell Moshe to write the second luchot. Then let me just show you the other opinion, the Barbanel. Barbanel, Ramban, Barbanel is this quote from Ramban. I think Barbanel says it nicer. We'll see that the other pesukim in for him in a minute. What does Barbanel say? Barbanel Pirish, Vayishma Hashem Elai Gam B'Pamahi, that's where we started this year. Shaya Kodem Shirei Minahar. Remember I asked you, in the very beginning, when Moshe says, God, listen to me this time as well. The first time was Vaychal before he broke the Luchot, and this time after the Luchot. Then we have to see what he's praying for each time. And the Eben Ezra, Rav Avraham ben Avraham, Ketav, Ja'ye ribui gam b'pamahi amashi pala aleyam alayam v'mechamet amalek. Remember, that's what we thought. Eben Ezra says, Vaishma Hashem gam b'pamahi, it's not referring to Vaychal, but rather to Kriyat Yam Tzuf and Amalek. Because there, Edenu Nachon, it's shut up to him. It's not against that. He says the same thing over here. Vaishma Hashem gam b'pamahi, Nitmei Shemoshe Yirad Minahar. That's Vaychal. Vaishma Hashem Nitzvato B'tel Zerach HaKfaya HaMiyadi. Vaychal was to stop the immediate punishment, but Moshe has to pray again to forgive them for those who participated. Gamata, say here. Gamata lachar vayyom shemashem tirtov v'nik mitzvot kaparat moral. So first he prayed to get rid of the immediate punishment, and now he's going to pray to wipe out the sin altogether. Okay? So one is to solve them from immediate punishment and death, and one is to bring the Shekhinah back to people. Says again, "Gam b'famei anachnu luchachim l'foresh like korban, and gam mitiachetz to the tachumim arishonim." That's the first prayer of Vaychal. Gam ha'idea mitzig Moshe Rabbeinu la'tzot yisrael mitzvei amiyadim. But kasher l'foresh b'biru shal Eben Ezra shakavara le'shmot yibet. That's when he goes up again, that he's praying. Gam b'famei is referring to matzim tzakelai by kriyat yam tzuf and by amalek. Gam sham matzim shibasham tzotos shem Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Ramban's opinion, but he doesn't want to accept that. But Barbanel considered both of them, he prefers Ramban over Eben Ezra. So let me just summarize real fast, and then I'll give you my take on it. Again, I'm trying not to take sides. The goal of today's show is simply to be aware of the two opinions. Because most people I've asked are not aware of the two opinions. That's why I wanted to share today. The fact that every fast day and every Shabbos Chol HaMoed, we always read by Chol Moshe Pnei Hashem, and Moshe davening before Chet Egg, before he goes down to break the egg yolk, it's part of our heritage. We know that prayer, it's so central to our Judaism. It's famous. But according to Eben Ezra, that prayer was said by Moshe Rabbeinu after he built the Luchot. And thematically, that's important because Eben Ezra is presenting an approach that when you're facing a crisis and there's something you can do to solve the problem, it's not time to pray. It's time to do something. When you can't do anything, then you pray. So that's his approach, which is amazing. And he's rooting it not in Pshat in Sefer Shmot because of Akev. Because Akev, it says he goes down right away and doesn't mention his first prayer. That sort of forces him to reread Sefer Shmot. Now, if I want Shmot to work, If I want this during Devarim to match, then I'd say Gam b'pamahi is referring to Vaychal. And for some reason, Moshe doesn't mention Vaychal. He only mentions the second prayer. Now, I'm going to share with you what Rashbam said. Rashbam said something amazing. I'll just summarize it for you because we don't have time to do it inside. Rashbam's bothered by this as well. And he says, Chumash is in order. Vaychal is in order. He has to explain why Moshe only mentions the prayer after he makes the Luchot. And prayer. He says, Moshe is telling the people, it's an amazing Rashbam. You can look it up later on. The reason Moshe mentions the prayer is not to tell you why he prayed. It's to tell the people that this prayer won't work again. The prayer, what would the Egyptians say about that God didn't keep his promise and Kut Avot only worked in the desert before we conquered the land of Israel. He says, Moshe is talking to people as they're about to conquer Israel. He says, that prayer worked once. But as soon as God brings you to Israel and you conquer the land the first time, Egypt can no longer say God wasn't able to help you punish them. And I can't say I didn't fulfill Brit Avot. And therefore, once you're in the land of Israel and you've conquered it, that prayer won't work. And if you mess up again, I have to punish you. No, that line of prayer won't work. It was a one-time thing. Don't think you can use that prayer again. You can't pull that out of your hat, pray to me, when you're in trouble. You understand Rashbam's working exactly the opposite? He's agreeing with Ramban that Chumash and Shmot is in order, but he has to explain why is that prayer a postscript of the story in Egypt? Because Moshe is telling the people, that was a one-time prayer that works once, don't try it again. It's almost working opposite. Okay? Moshe is saying, according, here's what I prayed, but you need to know that with a one-time prayer, it's not going to work the next time, once you capture the land.
Rabbi, is this a set up for the relation between Hashem and the Jews at the time from the Shoftim, that the seal, he helps them, and so forth? Is this the setup?
That's why they're punished so quickly, because they can't use that prayer anymore.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is actually, that is a setup to the relation at the time of the Shoftim, that all the time that happens, one after one.
Until they do tshuva, God won't help them.
Yeah.
So that's one point. The other point is, I want to make another way to solve the problem. I want to suggest is what we called before Herzl's dream come true. By fellow Barbanel and Ramban, Moshe's first prayer was to stay the punishment. Sometimes I need, what do you call it? I just need an extension. But you're about to execute somebody, like in all the movies. You know, they're about to use the electric chair. I don't want to find him innocent. Just give me 10 more minutes. You know, give me an extension of a day or two, so I bring more proof to something. You follow? But Moshe's first prayer is not to wipe out the sin and everything's fine. Moshe's prayer is asking, give me a chance to deal with the problem. Remember, because what's God tell Moshe Rabbeinu? Here's the way I understand it. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, what your people are doing is terrible. I'm going to kill them. I'm going to wipe them out. They've sinned. Go take a look what they're doing. And it's basically, go look what they're doing so you understand why I'm about to kill them. And God plans on killing them. And Moshe prays and says, give me a chance to handle it myself before you punish them. And what's Moshe do? Moshe goes down and deals with the situation. I want to pick a balance between what Eben Ezra is saying and what Ramban is saying. Eben Ezra is claiming it's no time to daven when you can act. What I want to claim is Moshe's davening by Kal to ask for time to act. Understand what I'm getting at? So, and only after Moshe acts and breaks the lukot and kills the 3,000, then he prays for kapara. You understand what I'm trying to put both of them together? I'm going to explain that again. That's the main point I want to get across. I want to use both. I want to live on both of them. Meaning, Eben Ezra is right that the prayers are similar. But and he's right that if you can act, don't pray when you do action. But if I want to understand why he prays first before he does action, he's not praying to God to forgive them. He's praying God to save the immediate punishment to give me time to act. And then after he acts, he sees what's going on, and he inquires, hey, with Aaron, what happened? With this, what happened? And he's able to get some people on his side. Now he has a case with God to daven for 40 days to bring the Shekhinah back, you know, and not to fulfill the punishment. So his first prayer is just to put it off to give me time to act. Then after he acts, then he can come with another prayer with the same things, but with a different request at the end. That now you can, now you don't have to punish them. I got rid of the troublemaker. It won't happen again. And then God says, okay, but I'm not coming with you. And then Moshe prays even for more to change your attributes. That's already the prayer later on of, where he asked for rachamim for God to change his attributes, where he says, I'm not willing to go to Israel without you. Remember when Moshe says, I want Brit tonight and Brit Avot, not just Brit Avot. But that's what I wanted to try to get across today. Again, the main thing is I wanted people to be aware of the Eben Ezra, because it's an Eben Ezra most people aren't familiar with. I'm assuming other than, I don't know, I never noticed it until a couple years ago. And I'm almost, every time I mention it to people, they've never heard of it. But we read by Kal so many times, it's a beautiful Eben Ezra, and an approach that when you need to act, it's not time to daven, there's hashkafa behind it. But what I want to try and solve is that I think Eben Ezra is right hashkafically, but in Shat, it's still in order, like Ramban and Rush and everyone else holds, but Moshe's davening not to forgive them in Baikal, he's davening, hold up your punishment, give me time to act. And he goes down and he acts. Okay? God doesn't tell Moshe go down and break the Lukot and do a trial. Okay? God tells Moshe go down, I'm about to kill them. So Moshe asked permission, give me time to act. And why give me time to act? Because of those two reasons. Because of Tevil Hashem and because of the promise to the forefathers. Now it could be after Moshe's actions, Moshe might realize you're right, it's a lost cause. But after Moshe gets the people, B'nai Levi comes to him, and he has some cooperation, then he has a case with God that maybe we can put up the plan for all together, maybe we can fix the situation and fix the people as well. And then we get the whole thing of changing God's middle of the Bachamim. But let me just check the chat real fast.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So according to the Ibn Ezra, where in Shemot would we find that prayer by Yechal? And in other words, where?
Oh, yeah, so that's what he says. I didn't, that was the comment. I'll show you exactly where it is. Let me share my screen. He puts it right here. So we are. Go back to the top. Good job. That's a bad thing because I'm not at home. I'm using the mouse on my computer and I don't know how to use it. I'm used to my, next time I get trouble with my hand mouse. Moshe goes down, he breaks the default, then he interrogates everybody. The people are wild. They kill the 3,000. You did a terrible sin. Moshe says, this is Vaychal. And Moshe turns to the guy and says, Ana chatam azeh chatat gola afto lebe lezahav. Batayim tisa chatatam. Bimayim mechenina misifracha. And then right here is Vaychal. He puts Vaychal right here.
Okay.
That's what he's saying. Look at the Ebenezer later, you'll see. He puts Vaychal right here.
Before Hashem's response.
Okay. And God says, but God's response is, I'm not going to forgive them. I won't kill them, but lead them, take them to Israel without me. And then Moshe Davins began about bringing the Shekhinah back. But he said, this prayer was 40 days. Because Moshe says, Moshe told them, I'm going up to God. And he says, I'm going up to God for another 40 days and 40 nights. That's the 40 days and 40 nights. He's going up again, like the first time. I went up like the first time. That's what he says in Devarim. But because the Lashon is so similar, he says it's the same prayer. So Ebenezer claims the prayer is right here, in Pasuk Lamed Bet. And God's answer is, okay, I'm not gonna kill them, but I'm not gonna forgive them. Okay? And therefore and God's answer is, they're not forgiven. I can't come with them. Bring them to Israel without me. I'll fulfill Brit Avot without Brit Sinai. And then Moshe Davis and Perek Lamed Gimel. No, it's then. I'm not going to fulfill Brit Avot without Brit Sinai. And the guy has to change his attributes. That's the whole theme of Midot Rachamim, which is the difference here. But he puts it right here. Okay. I told you it tastes a little complicated, but you have to, I somehow show you the approach. What's Ebenezer's approach? Ebenezer's approach, he studies Shemot. And he compares it to Devarim. He holds it's the same Bible. He doesn't hold the Bible critic. And he says, there's a discrepancy between Devarim and Shemot. He doesn't say different authors. He doesn't say, you know, D&J and all that stuff like that. He says, no, it's got a match. So, like, Devarim has its theme. Shemot has its own theme. He's mostly talking Devarim to the new generation and using the story as a motivator to make sure they don't make the same mistakes. So there's a reason he's spinning the story differently, a thematic reason, but the story stopped to match chronologically. But he says, when Moshe tells the story in Devarim, it seems quite clear that Moshe's long prayer was after he breaks the Luchot. It's clear he breaks after the Luchot, and it sounds like the same prayer that he did in Baikal. And therefore, he says, if that's the case, then the prayer has to be after the Luchot, and the thing in Shemot is out of order. But there's a reason out of order because when God said Atah Nichnali, he's hinting that there's room for davening. And that's why he davened after he does something about it. God says, remember, go down, do something, and let me destroy them. But when after you do something, there'll be room for prayer after you do something. That's that Lech Reid is go do something, and Anichnali is pray afterwards. And that's why the first thing God does most is Lech Reid, go down, Yishechei Tamcha. But what I wanted to add is to make them both fit is that I'll take Rabbi Ebenezer's Svara and say that Moshe's first prayer is not to forgive them. Moshe's first prayer is to give me time to act. There's, I need to stay, and then maybe I can do something about it. And that's what happened. And then after he does something, breaks through the luchot, makes him break the luchot, does something about it, gets the people on the side a little bit, then there's room for prayer. So what do you call it? To forgive them and pray a new start. Share, and someone asked something Zionistic here. Can you translate this principle act before prayer to Zionist enterprise? That was alluding to that. Very good. Okay. And that is, we wait for God before we build the thing. Okay. What Ben mentioned, I was alluding to that idea of the Zionist. First, when you can do something, do it before you pray. Okay. Already, any more questions? Sorry for doing different timing this week.
What time is the shiur next week?
Regular time. I'm in America next week. Yeah, tomorrow, next week, I'm what do you call it? That shouldn't be shut. Like, I'm another weekend, I'll be in Highland Park next week. But,
because Israel will be on the same time next week.
Yeah, but I'm in America, so it doesn't make a difference.
So 6:15?
Yeah, today I had to start later because I was in Kiva Shir in Binghamton in the university in the morning after davening. I needed 15 extra minutes to get set up.
Okay. Rabbi, is there a difference between this business of do you pray first or act first? Does it matter whether the people are committing a sin or whether a bunch of people like Haman or something like that are about to kill you? So if you're committing a sin, you have to act first because you got to stop the sin.
No, in general, if you can act, then of course you act. Sometimes when you can't act, you have to pray. When things are out of your control, then you just pray because you can't act. Now,
Esther has to do both, but she prays first. First, she does the fasting and praying, and she doesn't immediately go to the king and say, what's going on here? I've got this problem.
No, but she needs, because she can't go either way. She has to plan her entry to the king. So she acts right away, planning her entry, but while she's acting, she asks the people to pray while I'm acting. Like, she doesn't pray. You know, I think Esther acts right away. I mean, that's the whole question, whose idea was it to go to the king and what Mordechai wanted to do, whether she did her own thing. That's a great, when you study the Megillah, did Esther listen to Mordechai or Esther do her own plan? That's a great topic. It seems like Esther came up with a much better plan than Mordechai had. You know, with the 2-day party and everything, you know, she's drawing it out. But what she does in writing to Haman to Mishteh and then asking him to come for the second Mishteh, she's up to something that Mordechai didn't tell her to do. It ends up working nicely. But the question is, she immediately asked the people to daven, but at the same time, she's also planning her way to realize the problem. But again, how to do this, how to paskin in real life situations, that's not so easy. I just want to appreciate that there's room for both approaches. But someone wrote on the chat very nicely that, you know, the modern day Zionist approach is, you know, you can act, daven for sure, but act, if you can act, you can act. But when it comes to, what initiatives you can act on, that's something a little bit different.
Perhaps Esther is waiting because she's dealing with Amalek. And when you deal with Amalek, you have Macham. Yeah. You don't do it today.
It could be. You have to do, again, when you act, you have to realize who you're acting with or acting against, so that's going to make a difference sometimes. But relating, it's hard to relate to Esther because Esther is really hard to understand the story. You know, who's up to what? What's the plot going on? It's a really complicated plot, and there's like 20 different ways to read it. But the basic idea that there's times to act and times to pray, that's important. But just knowing that sometimes you have to act and sometimes you have to pray, and sometimes you have to do both, that's important. And what you do depends on the situation. The fact that there's a need for both, it's not enough just to act and not just to pray. That's the, I call that the Zionist, that's the Balanchine method.
Thank you, Rabbi. Very much, Rabbi. Thank you.
Yeah. Is that time?
Rabbi, you're very diplomatic. and you're a better person than I am. But when it comes to the Zionist enterprise of the last 100 years, not just that there were two approaches. And I know somebody, a gentleman who said the minute in his small town, he opted for the Zionist enterprise to try to get to Israel, the rabbis of his community made his life miserable and bitter all that. There was what ultimately proved to be the right approach, and there was approach that was wrong and perhaps evil as well, in terms of you can disagree with somebody, but to ostracize them, to make their life miserable, to shun them, all that, that was evil. And the majority of the rabbinic establishment in Europe did that. Not that they deserve necessarily a punishment for that, but they were wrong. And I will use the W word, you won't.
Okay. They might have been wrong in historical hindsight, but they thought they were doing the right thing. You know, based on their learning.
And the road to Gehinnom is paved with good intentions. So what?
Okay, but it's complicated. It turns out that it worked out good, but their decision, you know, they thought they were doing the right thing.
But the treatment of people
That's for sure bad. But we did the same thing recently in Israel. You can disagree with someone politically, but it doesn't mean you go and harass their families and them stay outside the houses.
I hear all this thing about we have to support the government and all that, and I'm thinking, and where were you saying that 6 months ago when it was a government you didn't like? Where were your statements saying it's just like I don't like in North America that we say, you know, we don't want government to control our religion. But in Israel, it's okay. I don't speak out of both sides of my mouth that way. And with other non-Jewish groups who want certain kinds of freedoms here, I say, and when you're the majority somewhere, do you still advocate for it back in your homeland? And they say no. And I say, so you're talking out of two sides of your mouth.
The way I like to say it is that, and ideally, democracy, and when it's understood as a way of life, and in countries like Israel, it becomes a tool instead of a value. But democracy becomes a tool and not a value.
And just so you should know, since you're Chutz La'aretz, the Judaism that I love and that most of us love actually developed Chutz La'aretz and was the whole idea of tolerance and how to get along, and that rabbis should convince and not legislate with the army behind them, is very much because the rabbinic Judaism developed as a minority religion, which didn't have that kind of brute power behind it. Yeah, and we see that it's reverting in some ways to its worst instincts in Israel. You get, unfortunately, the best of Judaism in Israel and some of the worst of Judaism in Israel.
Unfortunately, the rabbinic leadership isn't doing much of a good job.
But before 48, you had to convince people.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we have what to daven for, let's return.
For sure.
Okay, everyone have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Next week, we start our Pesach series. It'll be before and after, but from a different angle.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.